Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Monday, April the 1st, as we like to do once a week. We'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. We're going to talk about the Mueller report a week later. President Trump is having quite an impact on the federal courts, and it may very well be his biggest legacy. Even if he's only a one-term president, it's amazing what he's already done. There's a new abortion movie going around. It's really about Planned Parenthood more than abortion itself, but it's a fascinating movie. We saw this Saturday night, and I think it is a movie that could have an impact on segments of the population. Bill had a great article about the Iran nuclear deal. We'll talk about that. There is a crisis on the border. People keep denying it, but there is. And, of course, Vice President Biden has been in the news here lately. We'll talk a little bit about that. But let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, it's really nice here, a little bit of rain, a little bit of chill, but nothing that we have not seen before. So it's actually a pretty nice day in Dallas, Texas. How is everything in New York? Did I lose Bill? I think I did. I think I just lost Bill for whatever reason. I just, let me see.
I think we're back.
Oh, I think you're back. Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know what happened, Bill.
I don't know what happened either. The line seemed to go dead for about 20 seconds.
Yeah, I don't know. I was going to say climate change, but I figured either that or April Fool's Day. I wasn't sure which example to use, Bill, so I'll let you explain it any way you like.
It may be our internet service provider, which their technicians are trained by a local toy store.
It could be that. That certainly wouldn't be a surprise to hear that.
No.
But how is that? April Fool's Day. How is that to do a political show on April Fool's Day? How do you feel about that?
Well, it probably is appropriate given the atmosphere in the country right now. I mean, anyone who, you know, I happened to be at a meeting last night, and one of the people there was Duroy Murdoch, who was the distinguished black conservative, and he was talking about identity politics, and the more he talked, the more I realized we have really become a crazy political country right now, and we really have to straighten up and fly right, as the old song goes, because we have one political party that seems, the Democratic Party, that seems completely out of touch with the country. I mean, it just seems to exist on its own, and I don't think that's a healthy situation. And if you look at their list of candidates, it really just you wonder how any of these people, or most of them, even have the nerve to run for president. The qualifications are minimal. I keep on watching your little pal Beto down there, or Beto, whatever he calls himself, Beto. And the more and more I look at him, he looks like the kid who picks up the babysitter after the parents come home. You know, I mean, it's always the gaunt boy who comes through the house. Is my sister here?
Yeah.
Everything he says seems to be so silly and so poorly thought out. There are perhaps a couple of candidates who might evolve into serious candidates. But for goodness sake, when you look at the difference between the two parties, you look at the Republican Party, there must be seven or eight U.S. senators who could become president tomorrow.
Right. Well, I think one big difference, Bill, between the parties right now, and it really shows on the presidential field people who want to be president. To use an old baseball analogy, the Democrats don't have much of a AAA system or farm system.
That's right.
Because
that's right.
If you look at the Republicans, look, in 2016, you had some really good governors, Bush, Kasich, whatever. I mean, differences. I know some people don't like him, but he was an excellent governor from everything I hear. You had Walker, Huckabee, our governor here in Texas right now, Abbott, fantastic governor. You have Governor Scott in Florida. So you have like this group of people who it seems who have been training to someday run for president. Governor
right.
Pence, who became Vice President Pence. So that's what they're lacking. I mean, I look at their governors. Well, Cuomo, the governor of California, but beyond that, I don't really see much of anything, George. I mean, Bill.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. There isn't much to see. The Democratic Party, as you said, it's a very good analogy, actually, with the farm system. The Republicans allow people to rise in their party. The Democratic Party, being kind of a socialist party, is a top-down party. You know, the leaders rule. They get older and older, and they stay in their positions. There's not much dynamism. And now, of course, it has become the party of identity politics, where you have basically quota systems. You know that when a presidential ticket is drawn up nowadays in the Democratic Party, the first thing that comes to mind is not the qualifications of the candidate, but what group that candidate is from. And that's not the way it should be.
No, not at all. I mean, because, you know, you look at the people who are running, and there's very little executive experience. Forget the ideology, just executive experience. I mean, there's two men who are running, the one in Colorado and the one from Washington, who at least have been governors. And I always
yeah.
like to give governors a little credit because they had to run things. So, but those two are nowhere. I mean, they're nowhere to be seen as far as popularity. They're behind Bernie Sanders and Senator Harris and Beto and all of that. So I don't know. But it does seem to me that, you know, I don't know, serious Democrats have got to be worried about this. I cannot believe that it's just you and I and people on the other side who worry about this lack of seriousness. I mean, this fellow Beto, when he talks, I mean, he just like he can't stop talking and everything is, I mean, it almost seems like he's, remember this fellow who, the positive thinker, not Zig Ziglar, but Tony Robbins. That's what it looks like.
Yes.
His speeches are like you're watching Tony Robbins give you a pep talk. That's what it sounds like to me. And
yes.
There's nothing wrong with Tony Robbins. I'm not knocking him, but that's not what a president is for. I mean, Ronald Reagan was inspirational, but he didn't do that, Bill.
No, he was a good actor. He knew
yeah.
how to deliver a line. Beto, first of all, you just get the feeling he wants to be president just to be president. And you, there's really no policy there. There's no vision for the future. He obviously feels himself to be quite a bit better than other Americans, which is an old Democratic Party tradition and one that's costing them plenty. You know, somebody made the point a couple of days ago that with this field, it could just divide the party so much that even Hillary Clinton could slip back in and be a compromised candidate.
Well, you know that they've set up the rules in such a way, Bill, that could very easily happen. If
yes.
no one has the majority in the first round, then the superdelegates step in, and that could happen.
Well,
I mean,
and
their actual nominee may not even be somebody running right now, Bill.
That's right.
Could
that's
be John
right.
Kerry, for example.
Yes. And, oh, God, what an awful thought that is. But the just what a prospect. The party is in terrible condition. It really doesn't have any policies. It is just obsessed with the idea of investigating Trump. The television coverage, or rather the news coverage generally, is so mediocre today. They don't ask these people anything about policies, about our foreign relations, about our defense situation, about the impact on the country of these immigration crashes. And with the news media, the combination of the news media and the condition of the party, I'm really worried. I think we're heading for a lot of trouble.
Well, especially if one of them wins.
Yes.
Because if you ask him about the Iran nuclear deal, they say, well, Trump should have never canceled it. If you ask him about climate change, well, Trump should have stayed in the Paris Climate Change Accord. If you ask him about the border, well, Trump shouldn't close the border. But they don't have a solution for anything.
No.
And that's what bugs me. But before, you know, to me, the perfect picture of the party these days, maybe it's not fair to say the perfect picture of the party, but certainly a big picture, is that young congresswoman from the Bronx who just continues to make, now she's making a fool out of herself, which is, I hope somebody's telling her that. Because when you're actually you wrote about this, Bill. Tell us about it, because I think this is incredible what she said and the ignorance of what she said, Bill.
Well, you know, one of the first things you do if you're writing a speech or preparing a comment is to research it to make sure it's bulletproof, that you aren't making any gaffes. And she made a comment that the 22nd Amendment, which is the amendment that restricts a president to two full terms, was passed in order to prevent Franklin Roosevelt from running for a fourth term. Well, not only did Franklin Roosevelt run for a fourth term, he won a fourth term,
right.
And the 22nd Amendment didn't arise until after he died. It was actually ratified by the American people 6 years after Franklin Roosevelt died. It was 1951, and it became law. But the idea that it may have been thought of by Republicans as a response to the fact that Roosevelt won four terms, and they wanted to make sure this never happened again, but it certainly wasn't to try to prevent him from running for a fourth term, because he had already won that election.
Mm-hmm.
So she does not seem to care whether what she says is accurate. She comes from an educational system where your opinion is what really counts, not the facts. And she's a perfect reflection of that system. I mean, she is zealous. I do think she cares. But, you know, we're reading now more and more here in New York that people in her own district are becoming disillusioned with her. She's been in Congress now since January. She apparently hasn't set up her constituent services. People call to get things that they need from a congresswoman. And they get a tape recording, and nobody ever calls them back. She could have a very interesting situation next year. We forget the fact that she's got to run again next year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2-year term, and if she does run again next year, she might be primaried. There might be somebody who comes forward and says, this woman is not representing us. And wouldn't it be interesting if her career only lasted 2 years?
Well, yeah, that would be interesting. Of course, you know that she would go on into something else. Probably and have a career in Hollywood or maybe MSNBC if they're still around. I'm sure we'll have her back. But another Democrat who's been in the news a lot here lately is the Vice President or former Vice President Biden, who's now being accused of, I guess quick hands, if we want to put it that way.
Yes.
And he's done. He, you know, we've all seen these videos or these photos. It's creepy. I don't like it personally. I don't think a woman should be treated that way. But this particular incident with this lady florist in Nevada it's curious to me, because when I first heard about it, I said, well, Ms. Flores, this happened 5 years ago. He was there to help your campaign. Why didn't you just, I don't know, motion him to stop or look at him and say, please stop, you're making me uncomfortable or whatever. No, she accepts it all, takes it all, and then 5 years later decides that she's going to drop it on the American people. And now you're telling me off the air, Bill, that she's a Bernie Sanders supporter. So the whole thing makes a lot of sense, Bill.
It does. And I think it is just a political hit job. I think the Anita Hill thing was a political hit job. Again, women should be treated appropriately, obviously. But, you know, when people come in like this, as they did with Judge Kavanaugh, who after the hearings were over, this woman suddenly came forward that 38 years ago, Judge Kavanaugh treated me inappropriately. I don't know where it was. I don't know who took me. I don't know who took me home. I don't know the address. I don't know how old I was. And it's at the last second, you really wonder what the motivation is. Obviously, in this case, in the case of this woman who came forward about Joe Biden, I think it's purely politics and nothing else. If she was that bothered, as you said, she could have said something at the time. And then, you know, right in the middle of a political season. And that was exactly the way it was done with Anita Hill. The hearings were basically over for Justice Thomas or Justice Thomas when he was a nominee. And at the last second, she came forward with this charge And if you actually look at what he was charged with, it was basically gross behavior, you know, saying gross things to this one woman who then followed him around from job to job and comes
right.
forward at the last minute
right.
And made these charges. And it almost did derail Thomas's nomination.
Mm-hmm,
I
sure.
think he only won the Senate by 2 points or
mm-hmm.
you know, 2 votes. I just think it is so unfair. I think it really minimizes the issue of sexual harassment. It makes it into strictly a political thing, which is not
mm-hmm.
it's not supposed to be. And then you have do you remember the three musketeers from Virginia?
right.
Who this was a big story about a month ago. I don't
yeah.
know what happened to that one, but maybe that'll be back in the news soon. But these things are so intensely and obviously political that I think they embarrass us, and I think that they take attention away from serious cases that women may have about being abused.
Right. Well, you could have had a situation back in 2014 when she was running. She could have picked up the phone afterwards and said, "Look, Mr. Vice President, I really appreciate your coming here to bring me money and support. It's greatly appreciated, but, you know, I felt very uncomfortable with what you did. Please don't do it again. I'm not going to make a big deal out of it, but please don't do it again."
That would have been a good solution.
That would have been a good solution. It would have been completely private. But, you know, I think you're right. I think this one of the big problems, I think, with sexual harassment and climate change, and it seems everything becomes political, and then the facts don't matter because it's all simply we need to destroy the other side. And I sincerely believe that, and I heard this, I think, before our show started, I was listening to somebody on the radio here, and he said that the reason that they want to get Biden off the rail is because Biden is likely to be the nominee at this moment, and that means that Beto is out because you cannot have two white guys in the party.
That's right.
And so if you're Beto or you're Bernie Sanders, you need for Biden to be out because
yes,
you want to be the
exactly
white guy
right.
on the ticket. I mean, to me, it's that cynical and that simple, Bill.
It is that cynical and that simple, and we forget that the party is run by leftists today, not liberals, and they go right along with this stuff. I mean, this business that you can only have one white man on the ticket, that you have to have diversity. And you know what? One of the damaging things about this diversity business is that some group always gets left out. People don't realize that. By diversity, it's, you know, what do you mean? Who's included? Who's not included? And eventually people realize this is not a good deal for any of us. One of the people who really frightens me in this whole situation is Bernie Sanders. People are not taking him seriously enough, and they're not taking his history seriously enough. Bernie Sanders is an American Marxist. Bernie Sanders had sympathy for our enemies during the Cold War, and he's running for president of the United States. And you can be sure that none of his real history will be reported because the press itself is so far to the left that they will make sure to protect him just the way they protected Obama.
It's interesting because when you look at the polling data, and again, it's early and we don't want to bank too much on the polling data, but it looks like you have Biden number one, around 25%, Bernie Sanders like in the low 20s, and then it just drops off into maybe 10% or under. I mean, you have candidates who don't even show up in the polls, like
That's
the
right.
lady in New York and these two governors. And again, I want to go back to these two governors for a minute because they may be liberals, but I think the governor of Colorado, who was apparently a decent governor, was a successful businessman. I would like to see somebody like that run for president or at least get more credibility in the Democrat Party. But this is a guy that will say, "Well, I became a successful rich man, but I hate capitalism," or "I cannot
yes.
say that." I mean, which is ridiculous to me, but that's the state of the party, Bill.
Yes, basically he's saying, "I got mine, so now I hate capitalism, and I don't want you to get yours." And, you know, what's interesting about that is that many of the people they think they're talking to probably don't hate capitalism. You had mentioned on one of the broadcasts that there's a whole new generation within the Hispanic community that's very entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And they don't go around wearing Che Guevara T-shirts. They wear Brooks Brothers suits.
Sure.
And they're not interested in starting a revolution. And I think that's true. That certainly is true in the Asian community.
Absolutely.
Where they want in and they want to be at the top. They're not interested in being an identity group that just has to share the stage with everybody else and just go kumbaya into the future, not knowing what they're getting. I think this identity politics business may break up at some point. It may backfire when they find out that most voters really reject it. You know, you have this stuff in the Democratic Party going on where they're taking stands, and then later when polls come out, they find those stands are very unpopular. We have a situation here in New York, for example, where they recently signed into law with great hoopla an abortion bill that extends abortion protection to late-term abortions, to the ninth month, actually. Now, there was a poll that was just taken in New York State, and what was so striking was how unpopular that law is, even among Democrats. Democrats don't necessarily believe in late-term abortion, and I think that they are listening in the Democratic Party only to that fringe on the very far
right.
left that makes the most noise.
Yes, I think you're exactly right. And speaking of abortion, we went to see that movie Unplanned that just came out. Now, this is the movie that nobody wants to advertise. It's one of these, I guess, independent production companies. I don't know anything about that business, but apparently these guys are not getting any promotion anywhere. All the advertising is word of mouth. The place was full, Bill. Okay.
Yes. Well, the statistics on it
tickets.
Are spectacular.
That's how, you had to reserve your tickets. There was a line of people as we were leaving to see the next show. There's a lot of enthusiasm, and I don't believe that everybody who's showing up is necessarily a Trump supporter. I bet, like you indicated, there's a lot of Democrats who are watching that movie. The movie, you know, is about this young woman, Abby Johnson, who turns against Planned Parenthood and has now become an activist. And there's a scene in the movie that is really what turns her around. I think she was getting very serious about abortion, and then she saw something, and that was the end of it. But the movie is not getting any publicity. It certainly will not be nominated for anything, but it could very well be the most popular movie of the year, Bill.
It could be. It apparently on its opening day, it doubled the expected turnout of patrons, and I think that's great. You're right. Nobody will advertise it. I don't think the television networks will take ads for it. I mean, the bias is unbelievable. The politicization of these organizations is unbelievable. But the movie, at least in its opening days, has done very, very well. And I hope it continues to do well. I would like to see it. Some people from the movie interviewed on late night TV, but I think that's a pipe dream also.
That's right. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. I don't think there will be that's not going to happen. But again, the fact that people are going to see the movie proves that those late-night shows maybe are not as influential as they used to be, Bill. I don't know.
Well, I can't imagine that they could be. I mean, first of all, I don't think they appeal to anybody above the age of 12. You know, they really, I worked on The Tonight Show.
Sure, I know.
With Carson, and we never mentioned age. We never mentioned demographics. We were broadcasting to a country. And, anybody could come in and watch the broadcast. He was popular across generations, which was part of his gift. Nowadays, these late night, if you want to call them comedians, seem to want to appeal only to one little audience, you know, the young audience, of young liberals, and that's basically it. And I think that is why they have lost their impact, and nobody really cares what they say anymore.
Yeah, well, it's just an anti-Trump show. That's all that it is. But I wanted to say one thing. There is a channel here. I think it's a national channel, but it's over the air, called Antenna TV.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry about that. I had to go on mute for a second. Forgive me. And it's called Antenna TV, and every night they have Johnny Carson reruns. And every time I don't watch him every night, but when I flip the channel and I see them, I think about you, And this is every night for a couple of hours. They have reruns of Johnny Carson. And I've watched a couple of times, and you're left with such a favorable impression of,
yes,
of so shows how quality they were, how funny they were, how Carson would just bring these people in and just have a good time and amuse the audience. And, you know, 30 years later, these shows look better than ever, Bill.
They do. And they, you know, I went to many meetings with Johnny Carson, and I don't recall politics ever being discussed. His job, he knew, was to put on a show. He never called it a talk show. He called it a variety show. And he stressed that all the entire show has to be good, not just him or one other guest, but the entire show. And that's what we went for. And we went for good, solid entertainment. We weren't interested in sending anybody a message or reforming
right.
the world. We were not there to save America from itself. We had people of different points of view. There were no political debates that I can remember. I don't even know what Johnny Carson's politics were. And it was just a damn good show. And it stayed a good show for 30 years. He was on for almost 30 years as
yes.
the host of The Tonight Show. Now, these guys tonight, I couldn't even tell you some of their names. I don't
mm-hmm.
remember them.
Yeah.
They don't seem
That's
to have
it.
Any real national impact. I don't think people rush to their TVs at 11:30 at night to find out what this particular
mm-hmm.
host said about President Trump today. And they are, as I said, shows that seem to be aimed particularly at the young audience and at nobody else.
Right. Well, I tell you, those Johnny Carson shows on this network, Antenna TV, and it's an over-the-air network. It's not a cable network. It's really, I mean, these shows are great to watch. And,
yes.
and you sit there sometimes and you say, sometimes I'll ask myself, you know, I wonder if Bill had anything to do with this show, you know, with this particular one they're showing, you know. But they're going back to this, I mean, they're going back to some of the early shows and some of the more recent shows. I mean, it's really nice to see this. And it's fun and entertaining. And I look at this and I say, man, I wish the young people had a chance to see this because this is real entertainment. This is not, you know, we hate this guy or we hate that guy. This is just, it's 11:30 at night, like you say, and we just want people to watch this and enjoy it before they go to bed, Bill.
That's exactly right. Show originally had been 90 minutes. It was cut to an hour. I think it was just the pace was just too great for Carson. But for an hour every night, we put on a good show. And it wasn't only Johnny, as I said. It was the people around him. It was the guests who were invited.
Sure.
There were many people, famous people, who we really didn't want because they weren't good on the show. In other words, that wasn't their thing, and that they would not give the kind of on-screen performance that we demanded. And so they were not really on our list. We were always open to new talent. A lot of new talent was discovered there. David Brenner, I remember, discovering at an audition. The people who were on the show understood that they had a role, and that was to help make the show good. And Johnny
right.
would
no.
go out of his way to make them good because he
right.
understood that basic principle that was actually taught to him by Jack Benny, that the whole show has to be good.
That's it. No, I thought it was fantastic, and people should take a look at some of those reruns. I think they'll appreciate a different time. We're going to take a little break. We're going to hear from a couple of our sponsors, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Let's get back to Bill. Bill, one issue that I wanted to bring up before we get to the Iran nuclear deal and the Mueller report and the border, but I wanted to bring up Obamacare because it's back in the news. The president, President Trump, seems very eager to do something about health care, and I congratulate him on that. But the Democrats are back to the same thing. Oh, you want to take away their pre-existing conditions, and that's not – first of all, Obamacare is not working because people cannot afford it. You know, people are turning away from Obamacare because they cannot pay for it. So what's the point of defending pre-existing conditions that people cannot afford to have, Bill?
Well, they're defending
a theory. They're defending Obamacare in the abstract, what Obamacare is supposed to protect, but they don't seem to have a solution for the real problem people have, is that they cannot afford it.
That's exactly right.
Go to the website and check it out.
I was with some people last night, and they were telling me about that their children cannot afford to be insured, ridiculous prices, and basically their insurance premiums consume their lives. They're working to pay insurance premiums for Obamacare. And it's been interesting that as the people like Bernie Sanders come forward with Obama, we want Medicare for all. We want to do everything what Medicare does. Is that these people do not seem to understand the enormity of the costs they're imposing on people, and the fact that if you have Medicare for all, the so-called single payer system, people will never have any alternative. You will have to get your insurance through the U.S. government. And I think when people understand the implications of that, they're going to turn away from it.
Yeah. Well, in 2018, the Republicans really gave the issue to the Democrats because, unfortunately, of Senator McCain, we were not able to repeal it, which then we were basically running against Obamacare rather than proposing something, which is a good way to lose the election.
That's right.
But now, I mean, I'm glad to see that President Trump wants to actually do something. And, yeah, force the Democrats to do something about this. And Trump is the right guy to do it in that sense, Bill.
Well, he's got to do it. He's got to do mm-hmm. it. He's now laid down a marker. Just at the time of his greatest triumph in his administration, which was the Mueller report, which mm-hmm. really did exonerate him, even though they didn't use that term, he kind of stepped on it the next day by saying, we want to abolish Obamacare. Now, if he had a plan ready to go, that would have been different, but he didn't, and he got some bad backlash on that. And the only way he can avoid that reaction in the future is to come up with a plan with his people and some members of the Senate and the House who are working with him on that, a plan that is far better than Obamacare. And I think that's what he's working on, and he's going to have to present it. I believe this is potentially a good issue for Republicans if they get their act together and actually make a proposal. And I think that knowing Trump and how he thinks in very practical terms and results terms, he might just do the job.
Well, I sure hope so, because, you know, the Democrats are not going to put it up for a vote in the House because they're going to say, oh, you want to take away my pre-existing conditions. That's going to be their line.
Yeah.
But if you can come up with a plan that covers pre-existing conditions, then you might get enough Democrats in many of those competitive districts to say, well, you know, I got to go back and tell my people that I did something, and maybe this is the way. So, I don't know. Trump, I'm through underestimating Trump. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah.
He is a guy who gets things done, Bill.
He does, and I noticed that he's at 51% today in the Rasmussen poll now. I know the Rasmussen
wow.
poll is said to be a Republican poll. It really isn't any longer, but it is the only tracking poll we have left in non-election years, and the others have given up the field. They tend to be about 4 points or so above the other polls in averages. So we have to assume that Trump is probably about 46-47%. And overall in the actual polling, that's not bad for a president at this point. It really isn't. Obama was lower. I think others were lower. I believe Reagan was dramatically lower the year before his second term election, and he went back and carried 49 states. I think the Republicans, the Democrats, are depending next year on a backlash against Trump that may never materialize, but mm-hmm. they know that the one thing they will have in their corner is the American press. And that worries me, too, because I think they're right on that, that the press will do its job to try to elect a Democrat just as they did its job in 2008 and elected Barack Obama. But I think that Trump may outfool them all, especially if he can present himself as a very successful first-term president and a president who actually has accomplished something for the people.
Well, one thing that, you know, as I was telling a friend of mine the other day, whenever Trump talks about fake news, for a while there, that used to make me uncomfortable because it just seemed like, you know, a president beating up on the media, you know, it made me a little uncomfortable. But now, you know, I'm not uncomfortable anymore, Bill, because what we've seen in the Mueller report, the coverage of it, and all of these fake news stories, I mean, there are two stories where reporters were given Pulitzer Awards that turned out to be fake.
Yes, that's very true. And there was also an award given last week, incredibly, and I don't recall which award it was. It was a major award, though, I think, for a program they did on gun control that was one of the most disgraceful programs I've ever seen. It was all one-sided. A boisterous audience, nothing really accomplished, nothing really discussed at a high level, and this got CNN an award, got a First Amendment award. It's ridiculous. I mean, the standards are so low and the infiltration by the left is so high that you really wonder where we're going as a political system.
Yeah. Well, the Mueller report came out last Sunday, and, you know, that we're still talking about it, but I have a feeling here, you know, once again, you were talking about disconnect before the Democrat Party and the rest of the country. I think most people are done with this, Bill. I think that now that, you know, the information is that there was no collusion, I think most people are done with this. And if the Democrats want to keep beating this drum, I'm not sure it's going to work for them, Bill.
I think you may be right. I think that unless they can come up with something specific and substantial that the American people are going to turn away from them, just as the American people turned away from the impeachment of Bill Clinton. Now, Bill Clinton was not my favorite guy, but it's pretty obvious now, looking at history, that the Republicans made a big mistake in trying to impeach him. And in fact, they did impeach him. He had to be tried in the Senate because the importance of his transgressions was not immediately evident in terms of high crimes and misdemeanors. And it was a sinking ship all along, and it did hurt the Republican Party considerably. I mean, if you're going to go after a president through the impeachment process, that president had better, you know, have committed horrible crimes. I mean,
right.
High crimes and misdemeanors is the constitutional standard, and you can't impeach a president just because you don't like him.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the case of Bill Clinton, though, the big difference, I think, in that case is that there were, in fact, illegal activities. I mean,
yes.
Perjury is illegal. You know, lying, you know, there were some things that you could bank on. You could say, okay, he broke the law here. Now, in retrospect,
yes.
Maybe impeachment was too strong. That's, you know, that I accept that maybe in retrospect, but the law was broken. There was you could write an article of impeachment that he committed perjury.
Yes.
What article of impeachment do we have here?
Yes, and also he was disbarred as a
yes.
lawyer. People don't realize that Bill Clinton, former president, is a disbarred lawyer.
Yes.
So yes, you're absolutely right, and that was also the case in Watergate. A crime was committed. How big a crime? Well, one can debate that, but a crime was in fact committed. Here, we don't know that any crime was committed by the man who's the target of the impeachment investigation. You can't say that an aide committed a crime. It has to be the individual who's holding the office, and I don't think they're anywhere near that.
Right, and it has to be while he was president. Not
yes.
10 years before when he was a citizen in New York. That's the other thing. Everybody keeps talking about these investigations going on in New York. I'm sure they're very legitimate, and I don't question the seriousness of the people investigating. But if you're going to go after Trump because he did something 10 years before he became president, don't you have to wait until he leaves office to actually do that?
I think you do. I think that is the general accepted argument. However, they're hoping to come up with something in New York that will make it impossible for him to be elected to a second term. I mean, the whole thing is just bring him down, bring him down, bring him down. And it's really quite sickening when you look at it, because the country is being hurt by this. The Democratic Party really does not have a platform. It does not seem to be interested in solving any problem. And I think, you know, they're going to have to do a lot better in terms of proposals and a lot better in terms of a candidate than they are right now. I think that the one thing that could hurt Trump, other than investigations, would be if the economy starts to fail. Yes, if the economy starts to fail, that could hurt him legitimately. But I think that even then, he could come up with the argument, well, it's failing because the people who invest are frightened of the Democratic Party, and that would be a very legitimate argument. And it would have to fail by a substantial amount. I think people are used to the fact that there are going to be ups and downs, but he has really built a full employment economy, and it would take a really devastating blow to damage it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, and I don't think there's enough time. We're talking basically a year, so it would have to collapse dramatically in a year to have an impact on the election. But I just think the Democrats need to be careful with these investigations, because I think we're going to be talking about the FBI and the Department of Justice and what was going on there. I think that's the next big shoe to drop, and all of this stuff about Trump could look awfully Disney-like after that stuff comes out, Bill. I understand there's some pretty big stuff being investigated at the FBI and with respect to the Clinton Foundation. I don't have any inside information, but that's what I'm hearing, Bill.
Well, I hope there is. I mean, she really got away with a great deal. And this is, you know, I'm reading the same articles that say that, yes, that there is an investigation. There's also one apparently in Utah by the U.S. attorney in Utah, who Jeff Sessions, when he was attorney general, designated to conduct one of the investigations into the Hillary Clinton story. Now you have Barr as attorney general, who's a very serious guy, very capable guy, and the report is, and we can confirm this, that he was rather dismayed at the way the Hillary Clinton investigation was handled, and that there are some suggestions that there may be a new special prosecutor to investigate just that.
Well, my sense, Bill, I don't like investigations any more than anybody else does, but it seems like half of the country wants an investigation of what was done with Hillary Clinton, because people do feel, and I think there's some truth to it, that there's selective justice. And this is where the prosecutor could actually settle the problem. You could say, okay, we're going to appoint a special counsel to investigate this, and let's see what happens. And then, you know, he'll come up with results one way or the other. But I, you know, a lot of people that I talk to say, hey, you know, what about Hillary Clinton and the emails? What about Comey and the emails? You know, what about the Clinton Foundation? You know, be careful what you wish for, because you may get it. That's my sense.
Well, they've now established a kind of atmosphere of investigation the Democrats have. And as you say, they may regret this if it comes back to haunt them. And I think it may. I'm sure that Trump really wants an investigation of Hillary Clinton. I can't imagine him not wanting it. He's a tough guy. He really is. And when he goes after somebody, he expects to get his prey. If that investigation takes place, it will take place at the time of the 2020 presidential run, and it could have an effect on that.
It could very well be a couple of other issues that I wanted to get into, but just very quickly, Bill, one thing about President Trump, whether he's a one-term president or two-term president, is the impact that he's having on the courts.
Yes.
I mean, if you just look around, there's a long article that came out here in the Dallas Morning News over the weekend about the impact that he's having just on the Texas courts. And how, you know, in the article, somebody was quoted as saying, these are changes that are going to be with us for 20 or 25 years, the changes that he's making, the people that he's putting in the courts. So, I mean, look what's happening in the Ninth in the West Coast. I mean,
I was going to mention that. The Ninth Circuit,
yeah.
I mean, they may even force those Ninth Circuit judges to read the Constitution.
That's right. That's right. Or at least put other people in there to balance the playing field a little bit, you know?
Well, yes. Now, you know, the Democrats are now whining substantially that Trump is not playing according to the rules in nominating
right.
these judges, because by tradition, when you nominate a federal judge, you have to get the approval of the senators from that judge's state. I think it's called the blue slip. And he is basically saying, I don't care about tradition. I'm not going to follow that tradition. Now, I don't know what the Democrats are going to do. He's not doing anything illegal.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question of custom, but they think that custom is being violated and it's hurting them. Now, my answer to that is, if they were so interested in custom, can they explain why the Iran nuclear deal was not presented to the Senate as a treaty? That's a really
right.
important custom. I mean,
that's a really important custom.
That deals
that's
with
right.
human lives.
That's right. We're going to talk about that next. But one of the problems with these blue slips that you mentioned is that the courts have become so political. I think the blue slip was from a time when you looked for a good judge, but not necessarily one that wanted to vote one way or another way on Roe v. Wade. But now
yeah.
with Democrats, I mean, all that matters is Roe v. Wade. I mean, that's everything
that's
right. they care about is Roe v. Wade. So it, really, the blue slip, times have changed. And I think President Trump is right. If you want to put people in the courts, well, elect the president. That's the best way to do it.
Well, yes, that's the important thing. Now, the Democrats have also come up with an idea, which actually originated back in the Roosevelt administration, of packing the court. Increasing its number. The number is not actually stated in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Congress can do it, but and you know what the argument will be: diversity. We need a 20 judge court so we can have a judge from the Pacific Islands. We want a judge from the South Bronx. We want a judge who will represent people of the Aztecs.
Yeah, LGBT, I mean, every group in the country has to be in the
That's
court,
right.
which is, of course, not the idea of the court. The idea of the court is finding the 9 most qualified people you can find.
That's right.
And rather than having these partisan debates, I mean, I think when once upon a time, these people were nominated by a voice vote because they were so strong, the candidates.
Yes, that's right.
And
yes.
now, of course,
it was very common
yes.
to have a Supreme Court justice confirmed by a vote of like 95-3 or something like that. Now every vote is close.
That's right. Shouldn't be that way. It really shouldn't
no.
be that way. I think that's very bad for the courts. A couple of other quick issues, Bill. The Iran nuclear deal, you mentioned, you wrote an article about that in the last couple of days. Just wanted you to talk about that, please.
Well, the Iran nuclear deal basically was a terrible agreement. It was made in 2015. By the way, that year is important. You know, people forget the passage of time. That deal is now 4 years old, and the clock is ticking. It expires at some point. I don't recall exactly what year it expires, but after that, there is no Iran nuclear deal. They will go ahead and build the atomic bomb. And President Trump very correctly pulled out of it, horrifying the Europeans who were interested in doing business with Iran, and horrifying the Democratic Party. There is now a big push to get the United States back into that deal. I don't know what that would do for the United States. It hasn't been explained to us, but I don't think that's going to succeed. I think he's going to stick by his guns. Iran is hurting from the sanctions that we are applying, and I think that it is the only way that this country can put pressure on Iran, short of military action, to stop building intercontinental ballistic missiles and to give up all future plans for nuclear bombs. I think that Bush is pursuing it. I would even pursue it even more. I'd increase the sanctions. But he is being criticized all over the world for having pulled out of an agreement that was basically rigged in favor of the Iranians.
That's right. And then you had that $1 billion payment that was made.
Many billions.
Yeah, I never understood where that money came from. All these Democrats are all of a sudden so concerned, you know, with the president spending money that they didn't authorize. I don't remember any Congress authorizing those billions of dollars, Bill. Maybe I missed it, but I don't remember that.
I think that was money that we were holding, that we had seized at the time of the Iranian Revolution.
Okay.
And that was that was correctly seized from Iranian interests. But the sight of an American plane appearing in the middle of the night in Tehran carrying tens of billions of dollars that could only fuel terrorism was outrageous. It was just outrageous. But the fact is, it was done. I tend to choose, in interpreting those events, the most sinister explanation, which I think in this case is the right one, that Obama wanted to replace Israel with Iran as our main ally in the Middle East. He is a very, very pro-Muslim president, was a pro-Muslim president. I don't think he had much of a problem with the Iranian regime. Obama did nothing for democracy anywhere in the world, and I think that was his goal, and this was all part of that goal.
It was a very bad deal. I mean, it was an absolutely horrible deal, which is precisely why it never went to the Senate for a treaty.
Exactly.
He knew that it would have been defeated by his own Democrats, much like this Green Deal that went down this week.
Yeah, not one vote in favor of it.
Yeah, that's amazing. Bill, one last point that I wanted to bring up before we run out of time, and that's the crisis on the border. They're not calling it a crisis, but when people from the former administration are calling it a crisis, maybe we should call it a crisis. But this is another example of the Democrats, at least from my point of view, they don't have any solutions for what's happening on the border. You've got people showing up, your resources are being used up, and all we hear is that, well, we need to fix the problem, okay? Tell me how, Bill. But they don't.
Well,
I mean, Beto has a PhD on just pandering on this issue, Bill.
Well, yes, he has a PhD in pandering with high honors.
That's right.
I mean, he is Panda Bear. And what's interesting is I don't know who they're pandering to. I don't know anybody who is in favor of people rushing across the border. There may be some leftists in the Democratic Party, but I think the great majority of Americans do want a country ruled by law. And I don't think this issue works in any way for the Democrats.
No, and we were having lunch yesterday, and this issue came up. And I mentioned there was a lady in the lunch that we were having, and this lady's from Ireland who came here legally. And I said, I'm an immigrant myself. I came here legally, and there's 3 to 4 million people right now waiting to enter the country legally who are following the rules, who are sitting in a line. And most of them are sitting in their country watching us from. I mean, what
That's
message
right.
are you sending to those people?
Oh, yes.
When you, so what message are you sending to anybody with this? I think the Democrats are missing this big time. I don't know how they can continue to miss it so much, Bill.
I agree with you. I think what they're counting on is a young generation that's very poorly educated, not as pledged and supportive of the rule of law as the older generation. They're probably taught in schools that the rule of law is a crock. It's just for the rich. And I think that's what they're counting on. But I agree with you. I think that they're miscalculating, because at some point when you have these obviously calculated waves of illegal immigration, at some point there's going to be a tragedy that is going to make illegal immigration look awfully bad. I hope it doesn't happen. I don't like to see tragedies. But what you're seeing every day at the border is an outrage, and it's so obviously planned.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are tragedies. You have young children who are dying because they get to the border dehydrated. So, it is a tragedy. Tragedies are happening. We don't know how many people are dying along the way. That nobody reports that. So, there is a tragedy. Bill, as we look at this week, what are some of the stories that you'll be keeping an eye on?
Well, I think that the issue with the border is a daily issue, so it's going to be covered every day. I think the other issue that is coming up and is also going to be covered rather consistently is Trump's status as the president. It seems to have improved considerably in the last few weeks as a result of the Mueller report. I've seen the latest polling that the number of people who question his administration has gone way down. And I think the contest with the Democratic Party, which has already begun. Here it is a year and a half before the election, but this contest is in full bloom, and I think that is going to be an extraordinarily important thing in our lives. I'd also point out there are some major elections coming up. There's going to be an election in Israel next week, which will decide the future of that government. There's an election in Ukraine. They just ran the first round. They're going to run a playoff round in a couple of weeks. The situation in England we have to cover, and that is the instability of the British government because they cannot get their Brexit plan through the Parliament, and Theresa May's government may collapse. The danger there is not another Conservative government. The danger is the possibility of Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, becoming Prime Minister. I don't think it's going to happen, but that would be a tragedy for both Britain and the world.
Right, and there's always France and Venezuela in the oven. Also, those are issues, too, that are just completely mind-boggling. Well, Bill, thank you, as always, for your time, and we'll do it again next week, as always. And I'm sure that, you know, it's interesting, but one thing I wanted to say before we go, that you made the point in how early this campaign is, and you wonder which one of these people are we going to be talking about in 6 months, because it seems like there's so many of them that they've got one of them, more than one of them is going to run out of money or pull out. They cannot all compete, you know, drawing 1% or 1.5%. At some point, these numbers are going to be cut down, Bill.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And look, I think that we're going into one of the most dangerous and yet exciting political periods in recent history. You know, people say, they're very dramatic about it, that next year's election may decide the future of the country, but they may be right. They may be right because the Democratic Party has now become so extreme as a political party that it can take this country into a direction it's never been in. And that may not end well. So I think we say every election is an important election. This one is particularly important.
I think it is. I think it's very important because the issues are so important.
Sure.
Well, Bill, have a wonderful day, and we'll get together the next time. It's always a lot of fun to chat with you.
Looking forward to it, Sylvia.
Have a great week. We'll talk to you later. Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, always visit with him once a week. Today we did it on Monday, but we'll be back to our Sunday schedule the next time. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, where I think, I'm looking out the window, and I think we're going to get some rain now that I... the clouds got dark while I was doing the show with Bill. I don't know what that means, but they did. Anyway, have a wonderful day. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.